Good afternoon, and welcome to this final session. Hope you had a great conference so far. Yeah, go Build. All right, so this final session, we're going to look at building modern front-end development or apps in Visual Studio 2017, and we're going to look at a lot of different things. And let's see here. If I can go to slides. Here's some of the things we're going to look at. So generally, new features for web developers. This will be heavy on sort of the front-end JavaScript side. Then we're going to look at Angular for ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core in particular. And Angular, you know, could be React, could be Aurelia, could be other things as well. I'm going to use Angular. And then we're going to look at package management and maybe a new look at how we can do package management for the front-end and client-side libraries that we use. That's kind of interesting, a new feature that we're developing right now. And then finally, let's look at the status of Web Essentials. And what I'm doing here is that I have the new Update 3 to Visual Studio, the preview that went out Wednesday morning. And I'm going to use a ton of extensions, okay? At the end, I have a slide with links to everything that I've been using, so you can go download it and play around with this. There's nothing I'm showing you here today that you can't go home and do yourself, okay? So this is not like some far future stuff. It's all available right now in, to some degree or the other. All right. So let's switch over here to a machine. So let's look at some new features around JavaScript, or front-end development, let's say. So I'm going to create a new project, ASP.NET Core. And I have a couple of new templates here, Static Web and MVC Basic. These are not templates that you get from Visual Studio. This is a template pack that we released earlier this week to play around with some ideas that we've got, okay? So I'm going to show you Static Web. And just going to create it here very quickly. This is an ASP.NET Core project. But for all intents and purposes, this is a completely static website. Okay? This is all that it's got. There's not a single server-side component here to this project. Okay? It's just HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. And I don't know if you know this, but in 2017, I can just right-click a project and say edit, and I can get straight into the CS project file here. And you can see this is all there is. So this is ASP.NET Core 1.1, and it has a single NuGet package. And that NuGet package is what makes it possible to get the benefit of the ASP.NET Core tooling in Visual Studio, but without having any ASP.NET stuff in my project at all. Okay. So it's sort of hidden. And it is done that through this NuGet package. So let's run this site. So here we go. So it's a very simple website. Okay, it does have some media query stuff going for it. So it's responsive. But there is no Bootstrap. There's no jQuery. There's no Gulp, Webpack, Bundler, config, anything here. This is just the raw stuff for you to get started with. And so let's write some code here. So this is the JavaScript file. Let's write, let's write a function here called hello. Well, we're going to call a function that we haven't written yet, so let's write it. Hello, it's going to take a parameter called greeting. And I'm just going to see const element equals document.qs. And IntelliSense in this brand new JavaScript editor is pretty smart. So just qs goes to query selector. And, you know, get me the first p element of the page. Let's do a text variable here. And let's use the template string syntax. So we can put in the greeting variable or parameter, like, well, if I can spell it right, like this. And then finally, in our HTML, notice here that it actually knows that the ELM variable here is of, it's an HTML element. It gives me the inner HTML intelligence here. So that's kind of nice. So we do that. Now let's run this. So now my PLMed, it says hello world right here. So let's make a change. Let's just hide this. Let's call it hi. And I saved the file. And the browser just refreshed. Okay, I'm just going to do that again. Notice the browser where it says hi world, hello world. Okay, now we're back. So what's happening is that Visual Studio automatically, as I save any file in my project, refreshes the browser for me. So that's really, really helpful. It helps me with my workflow so I can be more productive. You know, and I'm when I'm productive, I'm happy as a developer. That's just how that works. But what is this? We got an error, okay? So let's click this, or a warning. And it says, hey, there's a missing semicolon. And this is coming from ESLint. So Visual Studio runs ESLint by default right here, and it says, hey, I'm missing a semicolon. And I can go up here, and I can save the file, and the error goes away. So that little error glyph you saw at the top of the editor right there, that's an extension as well that basically just listens to the error list. So you don't have to have the error list visible to see the errors that you've got. Or even more importantly, you're scrolled somewhere where you don't see the red squiggly in C sharp, let's say. You don't see it, and so you don't know there is an error unless you look at the error list. But this little extension will let you know. So that's kind of helpful. All right. So I want to debug this. So I got one of these little things. This is a surface dial. And I'm just going to click it here. Let's see if we can zoom in. I can now check the menu. I can do different things. One of them is debug. I'm going to click that. So now debugging is the active thing that happens with my surface dial. So now I can just click. And as I do that, it starts building, and it pops up Chrome here. And Chrome, as a new thing in Visual Studio 2017, we now have client-side debugging in Chrome. You may know that we've had this for Internet Explorer for many, many years, but we now have that for Chrome as well. So you can debug your JavaScript directly in Visual Studio. So let me do here and hit refresh. And you can see we break in my client-side script. I'm going to use the dial again here. Yes, thank you. I'm going to click to step into, and I'm going to turn the dial to the right to step over. And of course, I get all the stuff that you would expect from debugging. Like I can hover over the things here and see what's going on. I even have like locals and watch and all that sort of stuff. And we can make an edit. Say build. And then just hit F5 to run. And so we have this very, very nice debugging inner loop here between the browser and Visual Studio. So pro tip, get a dial. They're cool. OK. So you might have noticed that there's a problem with my JavaScript. This does not work in older browsers. Because I'm using ECMAScript 6 here. I'm using the const keyword, and I'm using template strings, like this syntax. So this doesn't work in older browsers. So what do we do? And there are many things we can do to take this ECMAScript 6 file and compile it or transpile it into ECMAScript 5. You can use the Node.js stack using Gulp or Webpack or something like that. Or we can take advantage of the already built-in support from TypeScript to do that. So let me just create a new file here, folder called JS. So Shift F2, brings up this nice little thing. So JS, and let's do site.js again. Okay, so add this file. So now we have site.js. I'm just gonna go in here and copy that. Put that in here. Because what I wanna do is I wanna make this my source file, and I wanna transpile this into ECMAScript 5 into where the location of the old site.js was. So I can just right-click this file and say transpile to JavaScript. Okay. So that gives me a tsconfig.json file in the root of my project, which automatically says, hey, call it bundle.js. Put it in /js/bundle.js. So that's what we have right here, right now. But that's not exactly what I wanted. I want it to be site.js. So we can just remove these two. And you can see here, I can have multiple input files. So it's not like I have to just do a 1-to-1. I can have multiple input files. And in the order I list them, they will automatically be bundled into, in this case, site.js. And if we look at the output of that, we can see that we no longer use const. Okay, it's now var. It's not a template string. It's regular old string concatenation going on here. So I don't have to use a Node.js stack to do this. And if I still want to bundle and minify and do all the things, there are extensions out there that will do that and will work great with this. So if you have smaller projects or things where you don't want or don't need a full Node.js stack to do this, then you get this for free out of the box with TypeScript. So that's really nice, and Visual Studio. And this also works at CI time or build time. Not just in Visual Studio. So now let's do this again. So I'm in my source file, the ECMAScript 6. And so let's see if the debugger will work. This is not the file that's being served to the browser. This is the file that's being transpiled into another file that is then being served by the browser. So let's see here. Something is happening. Here we go. And we're now breaking into my source files. So this could be a TypeScript file. In this case, it's just a JavaScript file. But because of the power of source map, I can do the exact same debugging experience as if it was just plain JavaScript, ECMAScript 5. So very powerful stuff, very, very easy, no setup, and it just works. So let's see if there's something we can do here to improve the JavaScript. Because this hello function here takes a greeting parameter. But what is greeting? I don't really know, and neither does Visual Studio. So if I hit dot, it doesn't really give me any intelligence here. It just gives me sort of auto-completion based on symbols in the document. It doesn't really know what greeting is. I haven't told Visual Studio what greeting is. JavaScript is dynamic, so it can be sort of whatever I want, right? But if we add js.comments, things get a little smarter. So I'm giving a description here. Print some message to the page. And we can say, what type is greeting? It's a string. Notice I get IntelliSense for this. That's kind of nice. So this is a string. And we say, the message to print. So now, when I dot, I get IntelliSense of a string. Yeah. So that's very nice, especially because the js.comment support is sort of the industry standard support, a way of documenting JavaScript. You may remember several versions of Visual Studio ago, we had the xml.comments that looked like the ones that you have in C Sharp. But this is the way everyone else is doing it, and this is now the premier way that Visual Studio is handling that as well. But what's really cool is not only am I helping out myself by adding the types. So this is kind of interesting, right? Because JavaScript is a dynamic language, And I'm now giving my code types, which is kind of odd, but very cool because I can be very explicit here. And I'm giving it some more metadata here. So now if I, you know, one of my colleagues is going to consume my function, it makes it kind of easy because you can see exactly what's expected here. You have to pass in a string, and here's the documentation for this very function. So there's a lot of benefits to doing this. However, what if I do this? Well, let's run this. What will happen when I run it? It will just print out 1, 2, 3 world. This is absolutely valid. There's nothing wrong with doing this. But, you know, for what I'm trying to do here, I'm trying to say I only want strings. But there is no checking that that's actually what's happening. Okay? So as a new thing in TypeScript 2.3, we can go in here and we can say, this is the tsconfig.json. This is where I set up how I want the JavaScript editor or the TypeScript editor and compiler to work. So it's called check.js. You can set that to true, like this. So this is a brand new feature, and it will help me, or help my colleagues maybe, or me in 6 months from now when I come back to this code. And now when I write something that is not a string, I do actually get squiggly here. And if I want to compile this, the TypeScript compiler will give me a compiler error because I've been very explicit. And I said, I do want that check. So if you saw Anders Heilsberg's session yesterday about TypeScript, he went into more details about how this type checker works. It works differently from TypeScript because TypeScript, they can be very explicit and be very accurate. JavaScript is not like that. It's a little bit too dynamic. So in case that the type checker doesn't know, it says, OK, then you're good to go. Whereas in TypeScript, they say, OK, that's an error then. For JavaScript, it's more relaxed. And so this is just a very cool little feature. And you don't have to transpile your JavaScript in order to use this feature. If you just have the tsconfig and you put check.js, you're good to go on your existing code base. So that's going to help you iron out a lot of potential errors that you have. All right, so let's fix that up like that. All right. So I don't know if you've noticed this is in Chrome. Let's see here. Nope, I need to do something else. Let's close these two down. So I'm going to open the HTML here. I'm going to make an error. And I'm going to make an accessibility error. Okay. So removing the language attribute or the lang attribute is actually bad for accessibility. And so we haven't really been able to do proper accessibility validation of your ASP.NET project before, for the very reason that we don't know what it looks like until it hits the browser. And even when it hits the browser and it's rendered, you probably have JavaScript that changes the DOM. So there really is no way statically that we can, from within Visual Studio, know whether or not your website is accessible. Unless we have code from Visual Studio running in the browser that has access to the live DOM and can analyze it. And we do. We do. So that's a feature called Browser Link. And because I have Browser Link and I have an extension called the Web Accessibility Checker, I can now go in here. And I have a Chrome extension. I built a Chrome extension. So check this out. If Browser Link is running on the page, you get a little Visual Studio logo showing up here. And we can click it, and we can see what is available to us from Browser Link. Any extension to Browser Link that supports the format of this Chrome extension will just show up here. One of them is the accessibility checker. So now I can say run accessibility checker, go to the error list, and lo and behold, it says make sure you have a lang attribute in your HTML. It even tells you sort of that this is very serious, the URL, and what the element was that caused the issue. I can also go in here in the Browser Link menu and enable it. So run on page load, just, that means just run all the time. So I can do that. Oh, let's zoom out here, undo my changes. Let's just keep the error list open here, like that, and save it. So now, this error goes away, because what happens when I save a file? The browser reloads, right? And it ran the accessibility checker again, and now I'm good to go. So this is the automatic sort of first line of validation for accessibility. And it's really quite comprehensive what this does. It uses the AXE core validation engine running in the browser. And so this takes care of a lot of common small mistakes that we can automatically find by running this tool. Another one that's kind of very common has to do with color. So it's nothing to do with the HTML specifically. But now, since we have a live running DOM that we can analyze, we know exactly how your colors are done. And are they in contrast? Do they meet the contrast threshold? Like, is the background and foreground colors, do they have enough contrast so can people actually see what's going on? And let's go over here. So notice this footer down here. You know, here's a common thing, and I do this on my websites all the time. I want the footer, the copyright notice, or whatever I have down there, I want that sort of faded out a little bit. I don't want it to be too visible. So let's find the footer right here. And let's give it a color like this. I'm going to save it. And you might notice that now it's sort of gray. Whoop. And of course, we get an error. Hey, make sure that the contrast ratio is OK here. OK. So how do I take a color? So I'm probably pretty close to where the threshold is OK, where the contrast is OK. But how do I take an existing color, regardless of what it is, and just make it a little bit darker? The surface dial. OK, I'm going to click it. I'm going to select Editor. So now, I just move it one direction, the other direction. Yes. So I saved the file, and now we're good, and the error went away. And you know, it's still like lighter, and I'm pretty happy with this. So very, very easy way to get this sort of stuff done automatically. I just released another extension this week for W3C validation that works in exactly the same way. So if you care about like being valid according to the HTML specification, you can go grab that extension as well. And it does sort of the same thing. It works the same way. OK. So that was new fun features, tools, and toys. I'll let you decide what is what, except that the surface dial is definitely a tool, not a toy. So what I want to do now is I want to look at Angular. And so right here, I have a completely empty folder. And I'm going to show you, this is a life pro tip. If you're in any folder and you go to the address bar here in Windows Explorer, type CMD, it opens CMD with that path. Ooh. Does it work with PowerShell, you ask? Of course it does. I just learned about this recently. I thought I want to share. Yeah. I'm sure you've been able to do this for years. All right, so what I want to do is I want to start building an Angular app. And if you've ever tried to build Angular on top of ASP.NET or ASP.NET Core, especially ASP.NET Core, you might have run into some sort of conceptual issues. The whole notion of having a .dup.dup root folder, and these things can be a little bit hard when you deal with Angular that has its own conventions. So you have one set of conventions on the server and one set of conventions on the client, and they kind of don't always align that well. So we built some templates. And I'm going to zoom out just a little bit here. So .NET new dash install. I can now install templates using the command line. And I want to install microsoft.aspnet core.spa templates. Okay? And that's a NuGet package, by the way. What version of that? The latest, star. Okay? If I run this, I will install these templates. Of course, I already did that. So if I do dash L, it will just list the templates that I got right here. And notice here we have, here's the MVC basic and the static web that I showed you before. So they also exist as NuGet packages that exist on the command line. So if you want to use those templates in, you know, VS Code or wherever you want to use them, you can get them from the command line too. But notice all this stuff that's here in the middle. ASP.NET Core with Angular or Euralia or Knockout or React or React and Redux or Vue.js. So there are templates for any flavor here. And so all I have to do is say .NET new and then the short name here, Angular, like this, and hit enter. And now we have to wait for, oh, no, it's done. Okay. So here it is. And so this is a template that uses Angular, and it uses Webpack. And it uses, of course, Node.js and NPM modules to bring in all what's needed for the client here. So I should do an NPM install, and then I'm good to go. Now I did that already, and I have the app loaded up right here. And so let's run it. So it's doing some magic on the server side, stuff that you might not expect from a regular Angular or single-page application. And we'll look at that. So you can see here, this is all rendered in the client. Okay, it's all just running JavaScript. No, nothing server-side except that we do get some data sent over from my API controller. So if you look at the project, it looks pretty much like a regular ASP.NET app. You know, we got our views, we got controllers, and then we have this thing called client app. This is where my Angular code goes. So this is all static stuff right here. So if we look at the app folder, we have our components, we have the counter, we have HTML, and we have the TypeScript, and then we have a test file here. So if you have tried this before in Visual Studio 2015 or 2017, you might have noticed that the nesting of files have been kind of annoying for this particular use case. So life pro tip number 3, if you go into your Visual Studio install directory and you find a file called toolsettings.json, and there is only one, so just search on top of the install directory, so C, program files, Microsoft Visual Studio 2017, something like that. You can find this file, and this is what controls nesting in Solution Explorer for ASP.NET Core projects. And so you can do path segments, you can say extensions to extensions, so all .js files should nest under coffee, JSX, and so on, if the rest of the file name matches. There are all these sort of rules, and we can completely customize it. Now, this is not a good user experience, we're well aware of that, that's why we don't document it, and it is very much subject to change. What we're gonna do is gonna make file nesting a first-class citizen that you can completely customize, and we're gonna make it really, really simple, but we're not there yet. So if you wanna do any Angular development where you wanna sort of fix up some of the file nesting, go to this file and make the changes. These changes that you see I've already done here are gonna be in the final update 3, the one that's out in preview. So what is it that's happening here? So we have our project, but we do some interesting things. If you've ever done Angular before, and you've seen Webpack before, what's really interesting about me just hitting Control F5 to run the app is that I didn't do anything with Webpack. I didn't go to the command line. I didn't do anything. I just hit Control F5, and somehow it just worked. And that's because it's using a couple of NuGet packages here called Spa Services, which uses something called Node Services. Node Services is a way for you through .NET Core to talk to Node.js. And Spa Services is something that utilizes that in a way that's very easy to do from ASP.NET. So if you look at our startup CS, that's where we put all our middleware into the pipeline. We can see we do, in fact, have a reference here to ASP.NET Core spa-services.webpack. And if we look down here, we say app.use-webpack-development-middleware, okay? And hot module replacement equals true. Hang on. Wait a second. Does that mean that I can take my running app and just make a modification to, let's say, the HTML here? Let's give it some like this and hit save. Oh, I was actually not on the counter here, so let's do that. And the browser just updates. This is the hot module replace. Yes. This is pretty fantastic tech, let me tell you that. So the stuff you normally get through Webpack when you have to run some console commands and so on, you kind of just get here because the spa services middleware talks to Webpack on our behalf. Okay, this is pretty amazing stuff. So we can get going so easily here. But it doesn't end here. One of the cool things, let me start with the problem. One of the problems with this is with let's say, the single-page application model is that it takes sometimes a while to download all the JavaScript, and therefore it takes a while for the app sort of to show anything on the screen. And these spa services kind of takes care of that problem. Notice here we have an app. Pre-render module, the attribute says. And it's purple because this is a tag helper, ASP.NET Core tag helper. So pre-render this module that you find right here. Okay, so it points to a JavaScript file. So if I remove this, and let's hit F5 here in the browser. Let's see here. Loading, okay? Loading. You didn't see that before because before we actually rendered all your views on the server. The spa services render all this on the server. And when the client side, when the JavaScript has been loaded, it takes over completely, okay? So that means search engines will see exactly what you want them to see. And you didn't have to do anything. This happens through the node services, through the spa services, running Webpack, okay? And so there's a startup cost, like from a cold start perspective, but with output caching and all that, it just flies. And so one thing is search engine optimization purposes. Another one is just regular performance. So let's say that I'm on a mobile phone. So I'm on 2G, let's say. And I'm on 16 gigs of memory, Core i7 machine right here. So let's slow this down by 5 times. It's probably closer to what you'll see like a sort of Android phone, a couple of years old Android phone doing. So let's hit F5 again. Yeah. Awkward silence while we wait. All right. Imagine what your users are thinking. So that's not the best experience. It takes a while. But if we have the auto load, so now we're recompiling the view here. But now we're not going to see any loading. What you see it spinning up there, that's to download the resources, the JavaScript resources. The page is already rendered, okay? So we can move around, hit F5. We're never going to see that loading thing again. So that's kind of cool. You know, some people, they just disable their JavaScript. Do we care? No. It works. So every time I click a link, it's an actual link that changes the URL and blah, blah, that goes to the right thing. It works even with no JavaScript. So you get that as well out of the box. How cool is that? Yes. So as I said, this is for a whole wide variety of different client-side frameworks, single-page applications. So speaking of Angular, so we are working with the Angular team to build new templates specifically for the Angular getting started experience. So if you go to Angular and you look at their tutorials of getting started, we're going to have a template for Visual Studio or for .NET, I'll say ASP.NET, for Visual Studio as well, but for the command line too, that takes you to the starting point of those templates. So everything is hooked up. It gets super easy to just follow the rest of the official tutorial on AngularJS. And so expect to see that sometime in the near future. All right. So one more thing I want to show, JavaScript unit test. So let me just right-click the webpack here. And I can just say Task Runner Explorer. And I get a few things here. So I have two extensions for the Task Runner Explorer. I have the NPM and the Webpack Task Runner Explorer extensions. This is the NPM, but you don't get an NPM icon. You get a Yarn icon, because I've been using Yarn instead of NPM. Okay, so Yarn is this alternative to NPM that also uses the NPM registry. So for all intents and purposes, you get sort of the same thing. But it knows about it, so that's why we see a cat instead of the red NPM logo. And I get Webpack. I can control Webpack directly from here as well. I don't have to go to the command line if I don't want to. Okay? But what this does, what these extensions do, or what Task Runner Explorer in general is doing is basically it just calls the command line on your behalf. So it's not like it does something that's Visual Studio only, for instance. So one of the things I have is that in my package.json file, which is my sort of NPM or my Yarn file, I have a test script, so I can run that. So it will run my Webpack, make sure Webpack is building everything, doing the bundling. It's doing that right now. It takes a little while here in the beginning. And okay, Webpack, wait until bundle finished. Notice how we didn't have to deal with any of that before when we just hit Control F5, right? We don't have to deal with any of that stuff. But now we're up and running. Karma, which is the test runner here, is running, and it says that all of my tests right here in the console in the Task Runner Explorer says everything here is good. We're green. Everything is a success. So let's go ruin that. Let's pin this. Let's ruin that. So here is my test file. And I'm just going to make this one right here. Save it. And notice that it now runs again here at the bottom. And now it's going to complain, hey, there was a, you know, expected 0 or 1. You know, there was a problem. OK. So this just now runs. So every time I make a modification, I can just see the console is right here. I can see any errors that show up. And I can fix the error really easily. I don't have to go to a console if I don't want to. It's all right here. So let's just fix that. And here we go again. Now, this is some of the things that we hear about all the time when people build single-page application or larger JavaScript applications, is that you always have to run something to get started. NPM start this, or Webpack start that, or NPM install, or whatever it might be. And so what we've done, let me just close this down here. What we've done is that you can now, for any task that you find here, you can right-click and say, bind this to a Visual Studio event, one of them being Project Open. So if I do this, then next time I open this solution or this particular project, my test runner will automatically start up, and I don't have to do that, and it will automatically just report errors that it finds, or test failures as it finds. And you can do this with anything, NPM install or whatever it might be. So big help in the workflow with that. And the cool thing is, you don't actually have to install NPM. You don't have to install Node.js for this to work. Visual Studio ships with both of those. So you can. You can tell Visual Studio, don't use your stuff. I have a much newer version of Node or whatever. I want to use that one. You can totally tell Visual Studio to do that. So you're not locked into whatever version of Node.js was there when we shipped Visual Studio. So you're in control. All right, so we do use a lot of Node modules here in this particular app. And we have to, because Angular kind of and Webpack, it needs modules, JavaScript modules. The way that it works is that you can't kind of do it in any other way than using Node.js tools to compile and run the app. And that's fine. That's OK. But there are other types of apps, not using Angular or whatever, where you just need a single file. You just need jQuery.min.js, let's say. And you know, you can use NPM for that, or you can use Bower for that. And if you're not on ASP.NET Core, but on WebForms or MVC, or something like that, you can also use NuGet for that. You cannot use NuGet in .NET Core for client-side, for content packages, OK? Not for Core. But for the other project types, you can. So we have these three different ways. And then there's a fourth way, which is I'm going to go to jQuery's website and download the zip file and find the jQuery min.js and copy it into my project, OK? Let's just see what that actually means. So here I have a project. This is a very empty web forms project. It could be any type of project. Let me install, let's see here. So there's, do you know this package installer, quick install package? It's a little extension. It allows me to install packages from a variety of different sources very easily by just a keyboard shortcut. So let's do jQuery. If I can spell it like this, and say, OK, install. And so now down here, we're seeing it's installing jQuery from NPM. And while it's doing that, it takes a while, right? Because what is it exactly that it's doing? It's basically cloning a repo. And so if we look at what we get a node modules folder, we get jQuery. And I want jQuery min.js, OK? That's the only file I'm interested in. And I want it in my lib folder right here. OK, so that's not what I got out of the box for sure. And now I have to find, where is that jQuery min.js? OK, is it in right here? There's 119 files, OK? OK, so, oh, it's up here maybe. Yeah, here we go. There it is. OK. So now I have that file. To move it up to lib folder, I might want a gulp task. Or I need some mechanism to move it. Or I can, because if I move it myself manually, then why did I need the node module, right, to begin with? So I don't feel that NPM is the best way to solve my problem. What about Bower? Let's do Bower. So I'm going to add a Bower JSON file and a Bower RC file. And the Bower RC file is going to tell Bower where to put things. I want them to put things in my lib folder. And the things that I want it to put there is jQuery. I'm going to save that. And something is happening because this thing is like making a funny dance. So something is definitely happening. This is built into Visual Studio. Like it will automatically restore Bower packages when I save a Bower JSON file. And it's done. So let's refresh and we can see, oh, it installed jQuery into my lib folder. So that's kind of closer to what I wanted, but oh no. jQuery is not part of my project. So what does that mean when I publish? Also, it seems to be the exact same 119 files that I got before. And all I wanted was this one file. So I'm not super happy with any of these things. If I did NuGet, I'm not going to do that. But if I did NuGet, it would put jQuery inside a folder called content. And I can do nothing about that. So the only option I have is to go and find the file online and put it into my project. That's just not a good idea. It's just tedious. So let's remove the Bower stuff here. Let's do this. What if I could simply go to the folder in which I want a particular file, right-click, and say Add Client-Side Library? And what if I could just search for whatever? And so this is prototype UI, OK? It's not done yet. I can select jQuery. It knows that I probably want the min file, okay? But I could select them all if I want to take the ones that I want. I could even change the version number here. It knows that when I'm on this side of the at symbol, give me the versions, and on this side, it gives me package names here. Yes. Well, hang on. It's a little slow, though. So now I'm going to hit install. Done. This is how slow it was. Okay? 0.1 seconds. That's how long it takes to restore a file like this. Okay, well, it's in my project. It's ready to go. I'm feeling pretty happy. But it gave me a file here called library.json. What's that about? Well, let's take a look. So this is sort of the manifest file. So from NuGet, we know packages.config. From npm, we know packages.json. Or Bower, we have the Bower.json file. Well, for this thing, we have library.json. I can delete this file. I will still have my jQuery, right? But this allows me to do some things. It allows me to restore on build. It allows me to not check in my library files to my source control and just have Visual Studio or the command line or whatever restore the packages, just like the other package managers do. I don't actually have to use the UI at all. I can just come in here and type in myself. So I'm going to tell it that I want the default provider to be CDN.js, because notice that there are two providers. And when there's two, what I mean is there's two built in. This is completely extendable, which we're going to talk about a little bit. I'm just going to say this is going to be by default. If providers are not specified, go with CDN.js. So that means I can remove my provider. So CDN.js is a open source CDN that has 2,800 client-side libraries, everything you need, and sort of nothing else. So if you go to Bower or NPM that has like tens and tens of thousands of all sorts of things, ranging from things you need on the server to things you need to transpile and all these sort of things, this has none of it. It's just the 2,800 most used client-side libraries ready to go, okay? And they're all over the world. They have edge nodes all over the world. And we can use them. They have an API. And so we can even go in here. Let's bring up IntelliSense for the version here. So let's do an older version. I get a light bulb, say, hey, you want to check for updates? There is this one. Just create, get the latest. All right, here we go. I can place it exactly where I want. So some people, they want to have all the jQuery files in a folder called jQuery. Well, just do that, like this. So now, dock it like this. So now if I save the file, oh, it's now located under the jQuery folder. But maybe I want more files than just the min file. Maybe I want the rest. And of course, you get full IntelliSense for that, right? So you can say, OK, give me jQuery as well. Give me the map file here. Save. And see, it's already restored. It's right here. Yeah. So let's install another one. Let's install Lodash. Get full IntelliSense. This is the latest version. Sounds right. Path. I want it in lib. jQuery, no, just in lib, that's fine. Files, you know what? I'm just not going to specify files, because that's going to give me all of Lodash right here. It's already done, right? It's already done restoring. I have it right here. So I can very easily go in and update the packages, just a simple light bulb to say update this one to the latest, or the latest pre-release, if there's a pre-release that's newer than the newest stable. And I can do all sorts of cool things. And it's fast. And it works offline. If you have used a package before or a library before, it works offline from that point on. No problem. We'll never hit the internet if it already has what it needs. Okay. So that was CDN.js. But there was the other one that was called file system. Whoop. So let's do a file system one. Oh. And this is kind of interesting. So ID, well, so now it gives me a list of folders and whatnot. And I want to go to C colon temp. And you know, I want to put this in the lib folder. And what files do I want? And it gives me all the files that I have there. So imagine this scenario. You're in an enterprise somewhere where you have a certain set of libraries that you're allowed to use or that has been approved by your dev manager or legal team or whatever it might be, on a network share, you can very easily just pull that in like this, hit save, and now Knockout.js is here. We can go straight in here and say, okay, just give me Knockout.js, but by the way, I would really love if you just called it like foo.js. Right. So when we're explicit, we can rename. If there's only one thing that can be resolved, then we can call it whatever we want. That's kind of cool. We can also go in, and instead of doing absolute path, we can do it relative to this library.json file. So there was one folder called files. It has file.js. And so let's call it file.js. There we go. And now I have file.js. Well, hang on. Does that mean that if I had something that I needed node modules for, that I could simply just go in here and get from my node modules, right? And we're going to call this J2. So now I can actually use this not as sort of a library installer, but as a way to copy files relative in my project or absolutely, as long as the output path is in the same folder or deeper as where my library JSON file is, okay, for security reasons. So you can't say, okay, take that file over there and put on this network share over there. It has to be sort of within the same project. Okay. Sometimes, though, my file is not on my network share. Sometimes it's remote. Sometimes it's on a GitHub repo. It could be any URL, really. So I can type any URL I want here. Let's see. So example.com, and that's actually just an HTML page. So we can call that example.html, save. And it's already done, right? So here we go. Let's just delete my lib folder. All I have to do to bring it back is to save my library JSON file. I can also right-click it, or I can right-click at the solution and say restore client-side packages or libraries. And it will do it for all the library.json files that it finds through my projects. So you can have nested library.json files if you want to. The tooling is not quite there yet, but for this command, for the one on the solution level, that one will work. It will just take them all. They don't have to be in the root for this one to work. So restore client-side packages is running. And boom, 2.2 seconds. It had to reach the internet here in this case for example.com. So that's kind of nice. So what about doing this on a CI server? Well, I can take this. So here you have the command for restoring the packages here. You can clean that deletes all the output files. Or enable restore on build. So by doing that, I want to install a NuGet package. And we say yes. It's installing, if the internet permits it, yes. We're good to go. Let's look at the output window here. Let's clear it. Now let me build. And check this out. Restoring packages. Boom, done. 0.22 seconds. This is not something that's going to be problematic in any way if you do this even when you're building within Visual Studio. You can do this conditionally, so say only do this on the CI server, for instance. Okay. So this is sort of a take. We had the first prototype of this out for like a year and a half, and we got a lot of feedback. It was sort of something we kept on, you know, a little bit quiet. It was all public and available, but we didn't really tell anyone. But 8,000 people found it, and we've been getting a lot of feedback ever since. So all the feedback, and I do mean every single item of issue or whatever it could have been, have all been solved in this new thing we're doing here. Unfortunately, we couldn't have this ready for this event. We really, really tried, but you know, things always, things have a tendency to not work as you plan, and that's what's happened here. So in a week or two, or a little later, you will be able to get this as an extension, and it will be built into Visual Studio. That has been the goal from the get-go. However, this is on the ASP.NET GitHub repository, okay? So If you go to github.com/asp.net or asp.net/library-installer, you can find it right here. You can totally build from source. There's also a button here that says the build is passing. And if you click that, there may or may not be a way for you to just get the extension in there. If you download it and remove the .zip extension, you can just, yeah, let me just show it. Why not? I wasn't planning to, but I'm excited now. So, because it's not done, right? It's not like, we need a few tweaks for it to be like, not necessarily done, but like in a quality where we're happy to start receiving feedback. So you do see it is right here, so are the NuGet packages. And with a few minutes I have left, let me just explain to you what these NuGet packages are. We have one here called libraryinstaller.build. That's the NuGet package that is being installed so that the CI build works, the one I showed you, enable, restore, and build. That's that NuGet package that handles that. The one called contracts. If you want to write a provider for this, you just need to reference contracts, create a .NET Core application, class library that implements or that has a reference to this contracts NuGet package, and then you just need to implement 5 interfaces. That means it is totally possible, and if you won't do it, I will, to create both an NPM and a Bower provider for this. So whatever is on NPM, you can get in to Visual Studio in exactly the same way as I showed you with CDN.js, but it's just with the entire registry of whatever is on NPM, with the capability of saying, I just want that one file called jQuery min.js inside the dist folder somewhere and put it in my lib folder, and you get nothing else. Right? So we can give you the exact same experience, whatever the provider is, which is really, really cool. So I just want to make sure you understand that this is not something. This is not a new package manager. This is a library downloader. It's a file downloader file. Yeah, basically, right? All right. And with a few minutes left, Web Essentials. All right, let me give you an update here. So what is Web Essentials? Real quick, it is a free Visual Studio extension that has an enormous amount of features for web development. It's 5 years old. It's been the current one for Visual Studio 2017 is the 5th version of Web Essentials. So the first one was 2010. It's open source, Apache 2, which means take the code, do whatever you want with it, sort of. And it has 3 million downloads. This is a very popular thing for web developers. And it's community owned. And what I mean by that is it is not owned by Microsoft. This is not a Microsoft thing. Okay? This is a group of volunteers that built this. And that includes all of you if you want to. And in the past, what this extension has given us is a bunch of features. It's been one big extension with a lot of features in that one code base. Okay? There were some issues with that. There were some benefits to that. The benefit was you install one extension, you get an awesome amount of features, like just incredible amount of features. The problem is that that a bug happening in one area of Web Essentials, maybe even an area that you don't use, can crash Visual Studio. Right? So you're like, then I should uninstall the entire thing because this one thing had a bug in it. So that was one issue. Another one was it was so monolithic from a source code perspective that we got very few community pull requests. So in 2017, this has changed. And you saw the first change for that happening in 2015 with the introduction of the Web Extension Pack, which was an extension that installed other extensions. The goal was always that that was the future of Web Essentials. And that is exactly what it is now in 2017. Gone is the Web Extension Pack for 2015. Well, it's still there, but there is no Web Extension Pack 2017. It's called Web Essentials, okay? But it's the same idea. Now we have a bunch of extensions, and these are just some of them. There's over 20, and there's actually much more. They're not that make up what Web Essentials is. So I've spent like over a year pulling out all the features into their own extension. Now it's maintainable. Now a lot of it is unit tested, which it wasn't really before at all. And so quality has gone up significantly, and the features are better. So it's easier to help and send pull requests, open issues. It's more targeted. It's better. And that is the future of Web Essentials. So just in case you've been wondering what happened to this thing, that is exactly what happened. All the features are still there. It's just packaged up differently. And so here are some of the links for stuff I showed you. The first link here is for the preview of Visual Studio Update 3. Okay, so go get that. The only thing I showed you today that required that is was the two project templates that showed up, the static web and MVC basic that showed up in file new project dialog. That requires a feature of the preview for that. Everything else works on whatever version of 2017 you have. tinyurl.com/extension list, list of all the extensions I used, including the Chrome extension. That Chrome extension is called Web Essentials, by the way. And finally, our blog. This is the ASP.NET and WebTools team blog. So go check that out. And with exactly 3 seconds left, remember to complete your evaluation form. It's important. And thank you so much for showing up.